Morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today? Good. I'm glad Jim pointed out because I was going to help alleviate some of the confusion too. I do not look like me. I'm still getting used to it, actually. This is only my second time speaking with a headset since hair. It took me like 10 times longer to get up here and put this thing on my ears and deal with it. It's just nuts. It's really cool to be here with you guys today and just listen to these stories of First Mike and Second Mike. That sounds more biblical, right? First Mike and Second Mike. And then Aaron as well. I love hearing stories of people that are walking with God and dealing with the mess, right? And, you know, one of the questions that I really struggle with is the question that, you know, every single speaker so far has addressed, and I will too. The story of how you came to faith and how long, you know, sometimes we phrase it this way, how long have you been a Christian? And I really struggle with that question, in part because it also makes me think of questions like, how long have you been walking? What was it, like 2, 3, 4, somewhere in that range? But have you been walking the same way since you were 2 or 3 or 4? Because, I mean, some of you were like, you were killing this. But I don't think I saw anybody walking in that way, unless you just banged yourself up in preparation for some epic cornhole later, right? You were at home practicing last night till way too late. You bumped your knee into something on the way to bed at like 2 o'clock after trying to, right? Okay, right. But we've changed, right? The way that we walk has changed. You've been walking since, but the way that you walk has changed. How long have you been driving? Since you were, I mean, the legal age was 16. Some of you got an early start, and we'll count the times on a parent's lap, like just doing this without having to worry about pedals, right? But the way that you've been driving has hopefully changed. I mean, I was of the school of thought because the Fast and the Furious was beginning its epic run as I was coming of driving age, and so I drove it like I stole it for a long, long time, right? Me and my super speedy Ford Tempo, crushing it. I don't drive that way anymore, and partly I like to think that's maturity. But there's just realizations that come over time, right? And so I've been driving since I was 16, but I am not driving the way that I was when I was 16. And so when it comes to this question of how long have you been a Christian, I struggle with it because I feel like my answer depends. It depends. When I was 3, my dad loves to tell the stories of taking bike rides with me and having the little bike seat on the back of his bike. And he loves to tell the story of me just peppering him with questions about like faith and life and death. And he's got this like existential 3-year-old on his back asking him questions that he was not prepared for as a father at that point. And so I could say from the age of 3, I believed in God. But I also grew up in a home where faith never really seemed all that important. Like it was a thing that we went to. We went to faith, right? Because we went to church. But we didn't live faith. It wasn't a part of our other 6.5 days of the week. We went to church because it was the thing to do. But we came back home and it was just life. And so I could tell you that I accepted God, that I accepted Jesus when I was in middle school, but it was academic. I accepted the reality of. I didn't have a need for him yet. Partially because up till the age of 8, life was pretty much working the way that it was supposed to. But then at the age of 9, my little brother and I, who's 3 years behind me, got sat down for the talk. And there's a couple of talks that can happen at around that age, so let me clarify. It's the talk that some of you may have also heard that goes something along the lines of, Mommy and Daddy still love you, but they're just having problems loving each other right now. And I remember that in the aftermath of that conversation in the weeks that followed, I remember a night. I remember a night where I knew I was supposed to be sad because my life was falling apart along with the lives of my whole family. I remember I tried to cry. I tried to will the tears to come. And they just wouldn't. And I don't remember saying this. In fact, I don't even remember thinking this. But what I've come to realize in the years since then was someplace deep inside of here, I said, okay, then God, I don't really need you. If there was ever any chance I was going to accept the fact that I needed you, that ends today. Because the one thing I needed you for, you're not doing. Because I needed you to save my family. And you're not doing it. So I don't need you. There is nothing you could offer me if you can't do this. And so from that point on, I lived a life of self-sufficiency. You know, yesterday we heard from the book of First Mike that we each have our smoothie of environment and lies and bentness. My environment was telling me I'm on my own. I know my parents still love me, and I have never doubted that for a moment in my entire life that my parents love me. But my environment was telling me, kid, you're on your own. People aren't looking out for you the same way that you would like them to. And so the lies that were coming in were, you need to take care of yourself. You need to be self-sufficient because no one's coming for you. And my bentness was already predisposed toward that. I was the firstborn, right? That's the next available parent, right? I was already bent towards be mature, be grown up. You're supposed to know better, right? You're older. Don't punch your brother in the face. It'll hurt. You're bigger than him, right? You're supposed to know. And so that lovely little cocktail was already being thoroughly enjoyed by me at that age of, you're right. My environment tells me I'm alone and nobody's coming for me. So that's the way it is. We also moved around a lot when I was a kid. By the time I got to high school, it was my sixth, I think, school in my fifth state. So talk about your environment confirming the reality that you're alone. Right? My longest friendship was measured in months in most cases. And this was all pre-internet and social media. So other than long-form handwritten letters, which I did do as a middle schooler for short periods of time, I was constantly getting the reset button hit on my life. And so I just grew more and more insular. Doubled down, tripled down on it's all up to me. I went to a Christian college. For any college basketball fans, Valparaiso was where I ended up. Not because it was a Christian school, but because they gave me money. And it was out of state, and at that point I was trying to get away from the state of Illinois where my family lived because I just needed some space. Because I was tired of being the one that felt fundamentally responsible for the family. Northwest Indiana was not necessarily the ideal destination, but it was far enough away that it felt like it gave me some distance to really just go do whatever it is I wanted to do. I went to chapel 3 times in 4 years. It wasn't a requirement. It wasn't mandatory. It was suggested. It was encouraged. They knew some things that I just didn't at that point. One of those 3 times was for a fraternity dance competition, so I don't think that counts. But even in the midst of a Christian college environment, I was still very much doing life on my own terms. And there were still so many things that I didn't realize were deep in there. There were needs that I didn't realize I had because I thought my needs were things like, I need to find a girlfriend. That seemed like a legitimate need. I need to get my studies in order so that I can graduate and pursue my dream of being a teacher. That's what I wanted to do since I was in the 8th grade. I did pretty well on those things. But what I didn't do well on was recognizing that there were some deep core needs that weren't even close to being fulfilled. There was a deep core need for validation. That there was a deep core need for love. That there was a deep core need for comfort and a sense of security and a feeling of everything's going to be okay because I've been living my whole life like it's all up to me. And when you feel like your life is all up to you, most of those things feel pretty well empty. And throughout those experiences in college, I had a couple that really just kind of reaffirmed my faith that it's all up to me. I was leading a leadership program, taking guys through a character building thing. And one of the guys that was in my program, was doing some tricks in the gym. You know those giant crash pads that they have that you can jump on and roll around in? And he was jumping from the bleachers, doing flips. Dude was a crazy gymnast. And he would climb up and he would jump and he would flip. And he would climb up and he would jump and he would flip. And everybody was oohing and aahing. And I wasn't there for this, but I heard about it after the fact. He climbed up and he jumped and he flipped and his head missed the mat by that much. But it did not miss the floor. He was in a coma. And I went out into the woods away from campus and I prayed like I'd never prayed in my life. Like, God, if you're there, if you're real, I can't do this. I can't fix this. I can't save him. I need you to. If you're real, show me. He passed away 2 days later. And I didn't know what to do. I was so angry. I was so angry at so many things in my life at that point, and that was just the most recent. And that really just helped to solidify for me, I'm done. If there was even a remote chance, God, that I was coming back, I'm done. A year later, almost to the day, I'm taking a new group of kids through the same program. One of my kids drops in his dorm room from an undiagnosed heart condition. He's in a coma. I go back out to the woods and I pray. I'm like, God, I don't even know what to do anymore. I don't know who you are. I feel like I don't even know who I am. But I need you to come through. I need to not feel like I'm alone. He passed away 2 days later. And I went back out to the woods and I said, God, I give. I give. I need you because I don't understand this life and I clearly can't control it. I need you. But it turns out I didn't, at least as far as I thought, because I was still able to make school work on my own and I got a job after college. It took 80 applications in 22 different states, but I came out to Northern Virginia, which I had never been to before, and I was fairly confident my students were going to be driving tractors because that's what I thought I knew of Virginia. My apologies. I've learned since, although I've also learned since that I now own a tractor and am a Virginian, so I don't really know what to make of this life yet. But I came out here after college, and I started teaching high school, and I was coaching. And I fell in love, and I got married. And it felt like all the things that are supposed to happen were lining up. And it felt like I was making them happen. Because that's the way you make life work when you feel like it's all up to you, is you make it happen. My wife and I celebrated our 1 year anniversary. And a couple months later, I was coming home from volleyball practice that night. It was a Friday. And I walked into the kitchen. I put my stuff down. And she says, hey, we need to talk. And you know that that question can mean a plethora of things, right? What I thought it meant, because we had just been having the conversation about thinking about maybe starting to consider possibly maybe having kids. And the first thought that went into my head was, holy crap. And it was an excited holy crap, right? Because being a father was something that was pretty high on my list. And I didn't know if at, God, what was I at that point? 24? I had no clue if I was ready. In fact, I was pretty certain I wasn't. Because I lived a fair chunk of my life without my dad as a daily presence in my life. And so it felt like I was going to be shooting a lot of this from the hip, and YouTube hadn't taken off yet. So I didn't really have much of a reference point as a third-party source. But I was pretty pumped. But the next words out of her mouth were, I think I have feelings for someone else. And I'll be honest, my first reaction, I laughed. Because it was just so unexpected. And I was so thrown. I didn't know what to do, and that just came out because it just felt so ridiculous. Like, you've got to be kidding me. This is where my life is going. And so I asked, what can we do? Can we go talk to a pastor? Can we go see a counselor? 2 days later, my marriage died. Promise I'm not trying to be poetic with the timing. That was how long it took. On the third day, she said, I'm done. And you need to move out because he's moving in. One of my best friends came to me the next day because I went to school because it was Monday. And what do you do when you don't know what else to do? You go hide yourself in your work. One of my best friends came to me and he said, you're coming to stay with me for as long as it takes. And one of my other friends handed me my first Bible. It wasn't actually my first Bible. I went to a Christian school. I had like 18 of them on the shelf. But it was the first Bible that I actually read with purpose. And his wife handed me a Beth Moore CD. And I didn't know what to do with my life. And so I started reading my Bible, which I had read before academically. I majored in history. I studied all the world religions. I read all the holy books. I'd been through it, and I'd punched all the holes in Christianity that I needed to keep a healthy distance between me and God. But I popped in that Beth Moore CD, and I remember I was sitting in the parking lot of my friend's apartment complex, and she said something about King David sitting on a hill and saying, God, I'm not going anywhere until I know that I'm with you. And it was in that moment that I surrendered. So if you ask me how long have I been a Christian, I could say 3, I could say 5, or I could say at the age of 27, when I actually recognized that I needed a Savior, that I couldn't make life work on my own anymore. I'd hit bottom. I didn't know what else to do. But it didn't stop there. Because if you asked me how long you've been a Christian, I might also say 10 years ago. 10 years ago was when I really became a Christian. And for those of you that want to do the math, I'm 39 now. So that would be after 27. Math jokes are the best. 10 years ago, I finally took off my bookshelf a book that my new wife had given me 2 years prior, when we were just friends and both navigating the heartache of our own separate divorces. She passed along a book to me as a friend, written by some guy named John Eldridge, called Wild at Heart. And I thanked her kindly for being a good friend and giving me helpful resources in a time of crisis. And I believe my response was something along the lines of, well, I am a man, so I don't think I need a book about being a man. I promise you, I've grown since then. 2 years after she gave it to me, I took it off the shelf and I read it. And I discovered two things. One, it felt like somebody was telling me my life story in the pages of that book. It was uncanny, his ability to describe not only what I had lived externally, but what I had lived internally. And it broke me open in ways that I didn't even know I needed. But the other thing that happened when I read that book was it showed me a God that nobody had ever told me about. It showed me a God who was living and active. It showed me a God who was communicative. It showed me a God who was wildly personal and relational. It showed me a God whose plan was restoration and rescue. It showed me a God, like we learned in 1 Mike yesterday, whose primary definition of spiritual growth is helping us to discover new and newer depths of his love. That it wasn't primarily about learning things or doing things, which as a consummate academic, that was my go-to. Right? Spiritual growth means I'm just going to read more books and I'm going to learn more things and I'm going to do more things with that learning so that I can then learn more things to do more things. And that book showed me there's another way. There's a better way. 10 years ago, I didn't know you could know God like that. 10 years ago, I didn't know that God could actually rescue and redeem like that. And so it's been a journey since then. My wife, Brooke, and I have now been married for 10 years. I appreciate the parallels of that journey together, of both our internal growth and the growth of our love together. Aaron was just talking about needing to fall back on the promises of God when things are hard. Because while I could say I've been a Christian since I was 3 or since I was 5 or since I was 27 or since I was 29, I feel like I could also answer that question as, well, it's been this long that I've been a Christian since having to deal with financial collapse. Because in 2014, after my wife and I had been married for 3 years, she's walking down the hallway of the school that she taught at, because she was a middle school teacher, and she felt God whisper to her. Again, like everybody's been saying, it wasn't an audible voice, but it was so clear and so loud in her heart. You're not going to be here much longer. She's like, you got to be kidding. I love teaching. What do you mean I'm not going to be here much longer? And he's like, I have something else for you. So after 2 weeks of wrestling with that internally and being terrified of telling me, because we're living in Loudoun County on 2 teacher salaries. That's another math joke for those that don't know. She finally tells me, I think I'm supposed to quit my job. And as someone who still has huge swaths of self-sufficiency inside, I still feel like my initial response should have been, are you crazy? We can't do that. And instead, through the journey that God had already started to take us in just those first 3 years of knowing him in a new way, what came out of my mouth was not laughter this time. It was, I think you're right. And I don't understand why I'm saying that, but I think you're right. Let's do it. So she quit her job. And we plunged ourselves into intentional financial hardship. And it was rough. It was brutal. And there was so much that I discovered in me that needed to die. So much of how I measured myself. And again, it's not like that was a big yardstick because 2 teachers in Loudoun County. But I never realized how much I equated my self-worth with something in the bank account or the quality of my material possessions. There was so much in me that needed to die when it came to self-sufficiency versus trust. And there was a rescue. There was a rescue. But like was also mentioned last night, sometimes God's greater uses of us come after a breaking. And I very much needed to continue to be broken. I was still recognizing that as much as things had changed, I was still discovering new places where surrendering to a Savior was pretty hard when you feel like you don't need one. And then let's talk about kids, because that's usually one of those things that we put on our list of seeming inevitabilities, right? I'm going to go to school. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get a place to live somewhere separate from my parents. And then after marriage, kids just sort of happen at some point. And sometimes we try to hold it off for a little bit, like you give it the Heisman stiff arm, right? Or you welcome it in right away. But like it happens, right? Like you took health class. You know how babies are made. It just happens. It wasn't happening. And it kept not happening. And it kept not happening. And I found myself in another place of how long have I been a Christian since not being able to have kids? And the challenge there was not very long. It's gotten longer. It's been 10 years. It's been 10 years of not having kids. It's been 10 years of trying fertility treatments and having that not work. It's been 10 years of trying to start an adoption process and then COVID. It's been 10 years. And God keeps showing me new places that I need to learn him. God keeps showing me new places that I need to surrender. God keeps showing me new places in me that need to die so that I can truly live. One of my favorite quotes of all time comes from John Eldridge's book, Wild at Heart. And it's not actually his line. It's somebody else that he quotes. It's a guy named Howard Macy. He says, the spiritual life cannot be made suburban. Spiritual life cannot be made suburban. It is always frontier. And we who live in it must not only accept, but even rejoice that it remains untamed. You've heard several others talk about God does not seem to care much about our comfort. Or at least he will care for us, but he cares more about our character. And I equate that very much with that idea of the spiritual life cannot be made suburban. And we need to rejoice that it remains frontier. God is always taking us into more. Discovery of more of who he is and more of who we are. And so as we wrap this up, I feel like I could just retitle all this, I Didn't Know. That's the overarching title of this, I Didn't Know. I didn't know who God really was. I didn't know how much I needed him. I didn't know what was available. And I didn't know how much I still don't know. But I'm learning there's more. And so as we transition, I just ask you to take a moment and consider some of those questions. Where do you still need to be broken? Because my friends, we all do. We are all still very much in need of being broken. And as part of that breaking, where do you then still need to surrender to a Savior who's not you? And where do you need to risk trusting yourself less and him more? Thank you guys for the privilege of sharing my story with you today, and thank you for letting me share in yours.